Blog Talk Radio.
Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis.
Kiss me, Jerry.
Honey, don't let me get started again, please. I've got to go.
You've always got to go.
Monica, you know that isn't true. I spend as much time as I can with you, but you know I've got the rewrite to do on the screenplay. And Sam won't let up on me until I hand it in.
Ooh, Sam. It's always Sam. What is he, your agent or your mother?
A little of both. Listen, honey, I gotta go.
Wait a minute. Hello? Yes, this is Monica Dean. Who's this? Oh, it's Sam.
Oh, gosh. Give it here. Sam, what'd they say?
I'm sorry, Jerry. Universal is going to pass this time.
But that script's exactly what you said they were looking for. An oil tanker blows up in New York Harbor in a fog, and a secret H-bomb falls off in the...
Jerry, look, I know the premise.
Well, that's what you said they were going for.
I know, but I also told you there was something wrong in the way you built to the ending. And I'm afraid that's why they didn't buy it.
Okay, so I'll fix it. So what's the big deal?
I'm sorry, Jerry, I really am. But, you know, every time you do a screenplay, there's a flaw in it somewhere. Would you consider working with someone on this?
Another writer? No way.
Yeah, but Jerry...
Sam, this is my work, my blood and sweat. What do those guys want anyway?
An airtight script.
All right, I'll fix it. Okay, Sam?
Well, okay. Okay, Jerry. No, incidentally, it's none of my business, but Maggie's been calling for you.
Yeah, I bet. Sauced again.
No, she sounded okay to me.
All right, I'm going right home anyway. So long.
Bad news, darling?
Yeah.
Come on, tell Monica all about it.
It's nothing. Look, honey, I gotta go. Maggie's been calling Sam again.
When are you going to get rid of her?
Soon, I promise. Look, I gotta go.
When?
When she fixes my script.
Tonight, we offer you a tale about that most pathetic and frustrated species of scrivener, the screenwriter. This particular writer divides his time between his young and promising girlfriend, his typewriter, and the embarrassing third party to the triangle, his wife. In a minute, our star Bob Crane will return with Act One of The Flaw. And now, Mr. Bob Crane in The Flaw. As the lights of Greater Los Angeles begin winking on, an angry Jerry Torgerson winds his sports car up the steep residential roads of a hillside development slightly east of the city and pulls into the driveway of a fashionable duplex. He takes the winding brick steps two at a time and lets himself into the carpeted living room.
Ah, my own true love has returned.
Hi.
And did you give my regards to the hyper-mammiferous Monica?
Shut up about Monica.
Oh, that's right. I'm not to know about her. Well, now let's see. What is safe ground for conversation?
Oh, come on, Maggie. Look, I wish you wouldn't call Sam. He told me you called up looking for me. That's tacky.
Tacky. But what you're doing isn't tacky a bit.
I don't want to discuss it.
Okay. Let me check that off, too. Can't talk about Monica. Can't talk about Sam. Now let's see. Who does that leave? Spiro Agnew?
You're drunk again, Maggie.
Oh, not again. Yet.
Oh, funny.
No, not funny. Sad. You know, if I thought you had any use for me, anything you'd like me to do, I'd sober up. But what's the use?
Listen, Maggie, it happens. It just happens that there might be something you could do, if you feel up to it.
Well, try me, she said hopefully, crossing to the sofa.
Be serious.
All right.
Universal turned the script down.
I know.
Sam told you?
He did not. Look, Sugar Plum, I was writing in college while you were going out for your letter in Varsity Necking. Remember? That's why you married me?
That's not why I married
you. Gee, no, Bo. Then why did you marry me?
I forget. Look, I'll come to the point, Maggie. Sam says there's a flaw in the script, in the structure of it somewhere.
True.
You mean you knew there was a flaw in it?
Uh-huh.
And you didn't do anything? Well, what's the big idea?
Well, a girl likes to feel like she's wanted.
All right. If you know what's wrong with it, can you fix it?
Sure.
Can you?
I said I can. Now, your question should be, will you?
All right, will you?
I can give you a flat, unqualified maybe.
What are you talking about? Either you can or you can't.
Oh, we're back to that again. All right, give a listen. You've got a lovely story about a foreign oil tanker that sneaks into New York Harbor with a zillion barrels of old crude oil and an H-bomb on board. And then the boat suddenly blows up. But the bomb doesn't explode. It falls to the floor of the bay. And then you've got a subplot going with a waterfront racketeer that's lovely, but in
a... Hold it a minute.
Hi, Jer.
Oh, hello, Don.
Doing anything?
Well, as a matter of fact...
Oh, come in, Don.
Yeah, come on in, Don.
I got something for Maggie.
Oh, Don, thanks. I've been blind.
You said it.
It's my lens. Don made a new one for me, for the one I lost. Isn't it wonderful to have an eye doctor living right next door?
It is if you keep losing your lenses.
Well, come sit down, and I'll make you a drink, won't you, Jerry?
Yeah, sure. What do you have, Don?
Nothing right now. I just stopped over to give you the lens.
Yeah, what do we owe you?
Oh, they bill you.
Well, then excuse me. I'll go put in my eyeballs and be right back.
Well, how you been doing, Jer?
Fine, Don.
Written any more movies?
Well, that's a never-ending job, script writing. You get one virgin idea, then you have 15 rewrites. Excuse me.
Oh, sure.
Hello?
Jerry?
Mm-hmm?
Is that you, darling?
Yeah, yes. What can I do for you?
Ha, ha, ha.
Listen, I wish you wouldn't call me here.
But I'm lonely. Are you coming over?
I don't know.
Or shall I come over there?
No. No, indeed. That won't be necessary. Look, I'll give you a call shortly. Yeah, goodbye. Darn agent. Won't give you a moment's peace.
Boy, what a life. Never a dull moment for you, right?
Yeah, I could use a few dull moments.
Who was that on the phone?
It was Sam.
Oh?
Well, listen. I just stopped over to give you the lens. Got it in now, Maggie?
Yes, thanks so much, Don.
Oh, no problem.
And give Kathy our love.
Sure will.
So long, Don.
Yeah, good night.
What a sweet man.
Yeah. Now, listen, about fixing the script.
Oh, yes, what did Sam have to say?
When?
Well, just now. Well, you did say Sam called.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, forget it, it was nothing.
No, you bet it was nothing. I picked up the extension.
Oh?
Yes.
All right, let's forget about that for a while. Let's talk about the script.
I don't think so.
What do you mean?
I hate to remind you, but everything you've ever written had problems that had to be fixed. And who is it who fixed him?
You did.
You're darn right.
So what?
So this, Buster. This time you do it.
How come?
Well, I guess the vodka's wearing off. I'm beginning to see things a little clearer now. Or maybe it's the lenses. Anyway, I'm not going to bail you out this time.
Oh, come on, Maggie. Just look it over. It's exactly what Universal wants. Only Sam says
the build to the end
is
a little
weak. Right.
Of course it's weak. You slap that ending on right out of the clear blue sky.
Okay, so what should I do to fix it?
Oh, no.
Oh, come on, Maggie. You can't hold out on me. You're my wife.
Oh, really? Well, you remember after all. I think I'll have a drink.
Not now. Not until you fix the script.
Every time you run into a snag on a story, you come running to Mama to bail you out.
I wouldn't say that. I've written over 25 movies.
You started 25 movies. I finished them. Isn't it odd? When the credits roll, it always says, Screenplay by Gerald Torgerson. Never Gerald and Maggie. I wonder if the Writers Guild knows about me.
Okay. If it means so much to you, fine. Well, I've got to rework this script before Universal gives it to someone else. Now, please, Maggie.
Just how badly do you want this script?
What's that supposed to mean?
How badly do you want this script?
I want it.
Enough to drop Monica and never see her again?
Oh. A little blackmail, ain't it?
Right. I've tried everything else.
God, you're pathetic, Maggie. For 3 years, I've tried to get you to do the civilized thing and divorce me. We could still work together. We could be...
Meaning I could still fix your lousy script.
Look, what good is a marriage if it's poisoning both of us?
It's no good. I agree.
Then divorce
me.
No.
Oh, no. Not quite yet.
What do you mean, not quite yet? How miserable do I have to get?
I'll divorce you when there's something to divide.
What?
If we split up now, what do I get? 50% of your car payments, half a mortgage? The day you sell a big one, another airport or towering inferno, then you'll get your divorce. With pleasure. Now, where's that bottle?
Jerry Torgerson is like a prisoner on a medieval torture rack. He's being pulled in two directions by the two women in his life. And he well knows it's only a matter of time until something snaps. It's 11 o'clock the next morning, and Jerry is at Monica's apartment.
She came right out and said it?
Right. She won't give me a divorce until I'm rich. And then she's going to take me to the cleaners.
I can't believe a person like that.
And she won't work on my script unless I promise to never see you again.
Oh? And what did you tell her?
Don't be silly. I wouldn't give in to her. I can get any one of 100 good writers to help me wind it up. Who needs her?
Say it with a little more meaning, Jerry.
Hmm?
The part about who needs her.
Oh, listen, Monica. If I were free now, it wouldn't matter to me whether I ever sold another screenplay or not. I'd dig ditches just to be with you.
I don't know whether I'd want to be married to a ditch digger or not. Ah, my agent. He said he'd call before noon. Hello? Here, it's your agent.
Yes, Sam?
Jerry, I just got a very strange call from Maggie.
Oh, great.
I think you and I had better have a little talk.
All right, okay, go ahead.
In my office, not over the phone.
Okay.
Look, I'll be back for lunch around 2. Can you make it?
Sure, I can make it. Sam, you sound a little... You sound a little ticked. Is anything wrong?
I hope not, Jerry. See you at 2.
Come in and close the door, Jerry. Have a seat. Okay, you really got me guessing, Sam. What is it?
Jerry, let's be perfectly frank. Now, we both know Maggie's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But we also know she's a pretty bright gal.
Yeah, I'll give her that.
And we also know that she has plenty of reason to do a number on you. Because of Monica, I mean. In fact, Monica's probably the reason Maggie drinks so much.
Not true, Sam. Maggie was having a problem a long time before I ever met Monica. In fact, it's the other way around. If Maggie hadn't turned into a lush, I probably wouldn't have ever looked at a woman twice.
Okay, whatever the case, allowing for the fact that Maggie has a motive in the case, she's really blown my mind.
How?
I'm going to ask you straight, Jerry. Does Maggie work on your screenplays?
Yeah, sometimes.
How much?
A word here and there.
Is that all?
Well, sometimes she'll suggest a little change in a character here and there.
Is that all?
Look, what is this? What did she tell you anyway?
On Flight into Doom, remember when the producer handed the script back and wanted the rewrite?
Mm-hmm.
Who did the rewrite?
Well, we both worked on it.
Did Maggie put in the changes? Were they her work, her ideas?
Well, on that particular piece, yes, I guess they were.
And then that TV movie Jungle Trap of Paramount. Who wrote the treatment?
I did.
And who wrote the screenplay?
Well, a little of both of us, I guess.
Isn't it a fact, Jerry, that every single script you've ever written had flaws that began to appear toward the end of the story, and then when you'd get a rejection, Maggie was the one who came in to fix them up?
Well, I don't know if it was every single one of my scripts, Sam. That's saying an awful lot.
Isn't it a fact, too, that you can start a story, but you just can't write an ending, and Maggie's the one who finishes them for you?
Well, she has helped me on a lot of them, yes.
Why didn't you tell me?
Well, what does it matter? What do you care?
Because I make my living representing talented writers.
Look, I'm welcome at the studios because I deliver a product. I deliver, Jerry. My writers deliver. I have to work in an atmosphere of trust, and for almost 6 years, you've been deceiving me. You never once mentioned that Maggie has been your partner in these scripts. She has no guild membership. She's had no screen credits. I haven't gotten her a dime. And you let it happen. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm putting Maggie under contract. I'm putting her into an alcoholic treatment center at my own expense, and I'm taking my contract with you to the guild and asking for your suspension. And when Maggie tells them what she told me, you'll be through in this town. And good riddance. Monica, you got to help me.
Sure, Jerry.
Look, all I want you to do is, if anyone should ask you where I was tonight from about now until maybe midnight, I spent the whole evening with you. Okay?
Okay. Do I get to know why?
No. Now, where's that script? Wrote it about 10 years back. It's got the perfect little answer to my problem in it. Yeah, here it is. Getaway, yeah. Wrote this one before I ever even met Maggie. There's something in here. Where is it? Yeah, here. Yeah. Mark takes care to aim the blow so that it could have been made by the rearview mirror of the car. Then he lifts the body into the seat beside him and starts down the hill, careful to wait until all traffic is gone. Yeah. Well, they may not have bought the screenplay, but it's going to play out just the way I wrote it.
Maggie?
I'm in the bedroom.
Maggie?
Did you want something? She asked hopefully, desperately, pleadingly.
Yeah, but don't get up. No, what are you drinking?
Do you care?
Well, sure I care. I was just going to get you another.
Mr. Torgerson?
Yes.
Sergeant Stanley, South Pasadena Police. You on this T-Bird down in the gully?
Yes.
Your wife's name, Margaret? I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Mr. Torgerson. Apparently what happened here,
Jerry,
is...
Jerry! Is anything the matter? I was just riding by and I saw your car here and I... Oh, no.
It's Maggie.
Oh, my God. Is she all right?
She died instantly, as far as we can tell. Medical examiner is down at the wreck now.
Oh, Jerry... Jerry, let me go down and see her. I'm a doctor officer, Don Cowan. I live next door to the Torgersons.
Well, all right, doctor. Yeah, go ahead. Now, what I was saying, Mr. Torgerson, her car apparently left the road and plunged down this gully and hit a big oak tree down there. She wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and she's been drinking.
Yeah, I knew this would happen.
How's that?
Her drinking was getting worse and worse. To be honest with you, officer, I've been spending the evening with a friend. I couldn't take her drinking anymore.
Well, she's had a lot, that's for sure. You say you were with a friend. Could I have his name and phone number?
Well, it's a lady. Her name is Monica Dean.
Monica Dean.
Yeah.
Your phone?
799-3480 Pasadena. I left there. I was just on my way home when I saw the police cars.
Yeah.
Look, please don't drag her into this.
Oh, there's nothing to drag her into, as far as I can see. Looks like what happened here is your wife drove down from the house, lost control of the car on this big bend of the road, and that was it.
Jerry, I just went down on the car. She couldn't have suffered even a second.
Thank God.
But there's one thing that's strange. I mean, very strange.
What's that?
Well, she made it a good mile down these winding roads. Hairpin turns, parked cars, narrow little streets.
Yeah?
I just wonder how she could have made it this far.
You mean because she's had a lot to drink?
Oh, no. Because she wasn't wearing her contact lenses. You see, I'm her ophthalmologist, and Maggie was just about blind without them. Why, she couldn't have made it out of her driveway without help.
Well, maybe they were knocked out in the wreck. We'll look around for them. Meanwhile, Mr. Torgerson, why don't we drive up to your place and see if she might have left them at home?
At home?
Because if she did, well, it looks like maybe she might not have been driving the car after all. Thanks for your help, Doctor.
Oh, not at all. Oh, and Jerry, if there's anything I can do...
Yeah, thanks, Don. think you've done everything you could do.
This business of writing plots demands, what was it Sam called it? An airtight script. Well, it seems Jerry's plot sprang a leak. It had one flaw, which proved deadly. I'll be back with a word about next week's crisis program and the names of tonight's players. Tonight, Crisis presented Bob Crane in The Flaw. Appearing with Bob were Ronnie Richards as Monica, Douglas Young as Sam, John Amendola as Don, Pat French as Maggie, and Phil Harper as the policeman. Sound created by Jeff Thompson. Engineering by Carney Barton. Post-production by Fred Sanchez. Crisis is produced at Audio Recording Incorporated in Seattle. And now, this is your writer-producer, Jim French, thanking you for listening and inviting you to be with us next week for Crisis.
There's crisis every night, if you ask me.
Turn that up. Okay, I think I can hear you now.
All right. I said there's a crisis every night, if you ask me.
Yeah, there's a crisis tonight, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Oh, one thing after the next.
Oh, my.
Well, but, gang, you thank know, you for being so patient with us.
Yep, we got the Bob Crane's birthday from yesterday. Did you figure, Dale, I don't do math well, did you figure out how old he would be today?
95. If he were alive, he'd still be dead.
If he were alive, he'd be dead, yeah. So, yeah.
Or maybe his social disease. Hey, all right, CW says she can hear us. All right, we had no audio, Dave, from out of the studio, just the program, so... apologize
wow.
to the folks for the faux pas. I blame Blog Talk.
Hey, why not? It's always a good scapegoat. Usually it's true, but it's also a good scapegoat.
It is. And I'm using it accordingly. But
and it was, that was an interesting story, the flaw.
It was. But just one last comment. As far as... what the problem is.
I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
Yeah, there we go.
You know, Hogan's Heroes was such a popular show, Dale, that at one point they recorded a album that sold quite a few copies. I should have tried to find a clip from that. That would have been fun.
I may have it. I'm not sure of the source, but I have a little something special. In fact, since... we had to get off to such an early jump start. We probably have some extra time.
We may actually have
realize
time
nobody
for
can
another...
hear me.
Ah, yeah, we may have time for a whole extra story at this point.
We could, but
I'll get that ready while you know in between shows and such.
Okay. Well, while we have that extra time, maybe you can tell me if this was part of that album. I just found out today that the theme from Hogan's Heroes had words.
That's what we're heroes for.
I'm not sure of the source of that, but I found this little...
Yeah, I'm not sure that was or not. The one I remember, they were having doing the whole Django theme. Nobody was singing it. They were whistling it, and Schultz kept going in, and he kept talking to... Hogan kept talking to Schultz and stuff. So, but it could be. It doesn't sound like it. And words could have been provided for the album itself when they didn't necessarily have it for there. Or it could be like Dick Van Dyke. Carl Reiner wrote words for the Dick Van Dyke show that were never used until Dick Van Dyke popped them up years ago and started calling up radio stations and singing them.
Mm. Now, the listeners did not hear the intro, so I'm just going to jump back into Bob Crane, born July 13th, 1928. Dave, that's what would have made him 95 today. Well, actually, yesterday. He passed away tragically on June 29th, 1978. Drummer at age 11, and then he began his entertainment career as a radio personality, starting in New York, later in Connecticut, and then he moved to L.A., where he hosted the number one rated morning radio show in the early 60s. He moved into acting and eventually landed the role of Colonel Robert Hogan on Hogan's Heroes. Got two Emmy nominations. He did. Yep. Dave,
yeah,
still with us?
Quite, yeah. I didn't realize. I knew he was a drum player. I knew he didn't. I didn't realize he started at age 11. But a lot of kids do. They love to make noise. And you think of some of the great comedians. Although he was more of an actor than a comedian, maybe a comedic actor, but had an actor with good comedic timing. He wasn't really a comedian. He didn't really stand up and tell jokes at any time. But he had good timing. And but then you know who else was a drummer? Johnny Carson was a drummer, and Mel Brooks was a drummer. So a lot of comedians, I think, you had the timing of a drummer, and I think we're going to see why Bob Crane was number one. I'm not sure that this clip we have from '61 when he was in L.A. because he talks about snow a lot in the forecast. So I'm thinking he's more around the San Francisco area.
Could be. I know that as a radio personality in the 50s, he was, when it was not a popular thing, you as a movie host, Dave, you know, the use of the old sound bites, particularly
yeah.
with horror hosts like The Ghoul. Well, Bob Crane was doing that in the 50s when it wasn't a common practice. So that was an interesting fact.
Yeah.
Bob, he also... after his career started declining after Hogan's Heroes, he did at least get in there with Disney with Superdad.
Yeah, yeah. I think he did a couple movies during that time. He was offered another series right after Hogan's Heroes, which was another group type story. And he says, "Yeah, I'm done with the groups," you know, which is a shame because he was so good in leading that group. The one thing I always say about Hogan's Heroes is the next time you watch it without the soundtrack. Kind of block that out if you can. And actually, you've got a good drama going on there, believe it or not. And the music and everything behind it, it's not wah, wah, wah music or anything like that. It's dramatic music. And the moments when they go out on the assignment and things like that, it's all really good stuff. And and if you take out that laugh track, you have a drama there.
Yep. Now, Dave, one of my favorite, and I know it's one of, I'm pretty sure it's one of your favorite episodes of Twilight Zone, Static, where the guy finds the radio and listens to the old-time radio shows, right? Bob Crane is uncredited and plays the disc jockey on that show.
He plays the announcer, we have it there. Would you like to play that?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
It's under Bob Crane. Under Bob Crane.
We will use that as a sort of a bridge to take us to our next radio program, too. We'll explain.
We can do that.
So that would be his radio announcement on his Twilight Zone episode, right?
Yes, it would be. They have a small clip leading up to it, and then the announcement.
Yep, and here is Mr. Crane.
Getting sentimental over you, Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra bid you all a very pleasant good night, direct from the Princeton campus in a broadcast of the Summer Swing Festival. And listen to that applause. Good. But before we sign off, we invite you to stay tuned for Major Bowes at his famous amateur hour. This is station WPDA in Cedarburg, New Jersey, returning you to...
Good evening, friends. Once again, the wheel of chance, or fate, as you please, is about to revolve. And as the barker standing at the wheel of fortune says, around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. Nor does anybody know what will happen when these young people step in.
I'm hungry.
You know how Mrs. Nielsen feels about
this. Oh, all right, all right, all right.
That was Static from the Twilight Zone episode from 1961.
Yeah, and I believe this was looking up Static. It was he may have gotten the part by doing this after he visited this Bob Crane show, Rod Serling, and because this particular episode of Static was aired on March 10th, 1961. Oh, no, it wouldn't have been because of Bob Crane. Actually, this was December of 61. So, yeah.
Ah. Here we go. But there you have it. And speaking of Twilight Zone, the creator, Rod Serling, did a little bit of a radio program.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid to go out on the road to do this. And it would have been quite a trick to go on Bob Crane's show. It was, yeah, I'm sure it was very highly rated, very popular. But when you do a radio show like this, you know, especially back in the 60s and 70s, as we know, growing up listening to these guys, they always had so many interruptions with weather and sometimes sports and things like that. So, you know, it means if you're going to get anything at all, you got to stick around for a while. And, that's why upcoming here, Dale, we have a 35-minute clip we can split up in the middle here. Not quite in the middle. A little short on the first part. But interesting to hear not only Bob Crane in action, but a personalized type interview that he gets into with Bob Crane or Rod Serling.
And this is from Zero Hour, correct?
No. This is the Bob Crane show.
Okay, got it.
Should be part. Okay, and this part one, and this itself, as you would ask, is from December 11th of 1950 and one.
Whatever happened to Rose Murphy? That's the wrong song. Completely off my nut today. A very happy good morning. Jackie Chapman, our fine engineer, is with us again.
A waterfall, a waterfall.
And my name is Bob Crane.
Bob Crane.
That's right. We're here till 5 of 10.
Not so waterfall.
Get him out of the studio. Rod Serling from the Twilight Zone is our in-person guest this morning. To Rod in a moment. Just a little drumming here with Ramsey Lewis. Trio, and here comes Santa Claus.
the difference is in the taste. Manischewitz.
What a wine.
Manischewitz.
Are you the man from Manischewitz?
Yes. Have you got the blackberries for my wine?
Uh-huh.
The European blackberries?
Yep.
The luscious European blackberries?
Right.
The big luscious European blackberries?
Well, they're blackberries.
My good fellow, Manischewitz blackberry wine is 100% pure. The luscious flavor is natural. That's why we can say the difference is in the taste. So I repeat, have you got the big, luscious European blackberries?
Oh, big, they're not.
Next.
Are you the man from Manischewitz?
Yes. Have you got the blackberries?
Uh-huh.
The European blackberries?
Yes, yes.
The luscious European blackberries?
Manischewitz tastes like grapes right off the vine. Imported sun-drenched berries make the berry wine divine. That's why this famous label is your natural flavor sign. Manischewitz, man, oh, Manischewitz.
Specially sweetened, a proud product of Manischewitz Wine Company, New York.
18 and a half minutes after 9 on the KNX clock the time. That was Ramsey Lewis just a moment ago. And here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, knock down Santa Claus Lane. In a pretty hip version of it. Carol Steller, our Jim Dandy secretary there, will you clear the way for Mr. Sherling, who's going to sit down? He's our in-person guest this morning.
Just kick them bottles under the sofa. We had a little party going last night.
Just kick them under the sofa. That's it. Thank you, Oz. 19 minutes after 9 on the KNX clock. It's going to be a fairly nice day today, incidentally. Mostly sunny with gusty winds at times. High temperature around 57. There is a chance of showers or snow flurries in the vicinity of the mountains today. And if you're looking to go skiing, call Atlantic 79711. Rod Serling is a name that's been familiar with the television, or rather associated with the television industry since what year was it that you broke into television in a big way, Rod?
49.
Was it not that long
1949,
ago?
I did my first TV.
And what was the show?
It was a show called Stars Over Hollywood, done out here as a half hour. And I think I got all of $100 for the first script, Bob.
You wrote the script. For those of you who may not be familiar with television, Rod Serling is one of the leading writers. Actually, more than a writer, you've won awards for your. What was a better word than writer? You're not really.
There is no better word than writer, Bob.
Really, I'm constantly. For instance, I refer to Tiny Little as a piano player, and he says, "Please, you know, I'm an artist or something."
No, writer is a nice.
Writer is a good.
Yeah,
thing.
That's a fair sobriquet for any.
So you made $100 on your first writing.
They got what they paid for, Bob. It's as simple as that.
And then how did things advance from there, Rod?
I just kept on writing. And
it was stepping on people?
No stepping on people. At least not hard, Bob. I never left the Twilight Zone. I've been here 5 minutes. I think I'm back.
Is this like the Twilight Zone?
A little wilder, maybe, but very, very similar.
Talking about writing efforts, now back in 1949, you made $100 for your first TV writing effort. What does a good scripter, for instance, and without giving away any secrets, what does somebody get for a half-hour TV show today?
The average half-hour show, commercial network, runs about $2,000 plus residuals.
And how long would it take a writer to turn out something like that?
Well, that varies, Bob. The average guy who knocks out a Private Eye or a Western can do it in as little a time as perhaps a day and a half. The mm-hmm. very serious Playhouse 90 writers say will work upwards to 6 and 7 months doing a show.
And what will he get as money to keep him going during that 6 or 7 months?
Very little. That's one of the problems, of course, with writing for television, when you write for serious adult shows like Playhouse 90.
You really have to be loaded with loot then to get into it to begin with.
That's one of the requirements, yeah. Not really, though. I know a few, you know, independently wealthy writers, but there's a great kick and a great challenge to doing a show like Playhouse 90 or Studio One or any of those.
But imagine a guy devoting 5 or 6 months, to say, to a Playhouse 90 and getting his... How much money would he get for that?
Well, Playhouse 90 used to pay on the average of about $10,000 a script.
Oh. Oh, well, then that's...
And one can live on $10,000, you know, Bob. It doesn't heat a pool, but it gives you something to eat.
Turn out a couple of those a season, and you got a good thing going. I've read so much about the dearth of good dramatic television writing nowadays. Is there a...
No, there's no dearth in writing. There's a dearth in programs that buy serious, mature television scripts. You know, most of the good live shows have left the air. Studio One, Kraft, Playhouse 90, they're all gone. And what's left, of course, is a residue of half-hour stuff, which dabbles in film only. And though there are plenty of good writers around, there are very little places where they can sell their material.
Well, then, is the reason there is a, all right, let's say a lack of good dramatic effort in television, and especially in the live field, is the reason being that there is so much coming from Hollywood? Is Hollywood at fault for this?
No, not at fault. There are economics operative here. It's very difficult to try to produce and make up an expensive show which dies after its first time out. And the beauty of film, of course, economically, is that there it lies in the can. It can be repeated several times. There are residual rights and residual payments, you know, practically ad infinitum.
I've seen so many live dramatic efforts, though, Rod, that just left me absolutely cold. For instance, somebody did, and I think it was Playhouse 90, or one of the dramatic shows, did For Whom the Bell Tolls, and in a live version, and it suffered so much in comparison to what the...
That's been one of the major problems, Bob, with very ambitious guys, and I'm not knocking, I'm making a passing comment, hardly a judgment,
yeah.
That they try to do those things which the motion pictures have done so well. I remember a show, A Tale of Two Cities, that was done quite handsomely as a motion picture with Ronald Coleman. You know, with the scope and the physical depth that only Hollywood can lend it.
Yeah.
And then it was done on television. It looked as if it were done in a clothes closet in Grand Central Station. You know, with six extras who you recognize because they kept passing the camera nine times in a row. Same guys. And that's always been my feeling, that if you're going to go big, probe deep. Do it vertically, not horizontally, because a horizontal... freedom can be accomplished very beautifully in motion pictures. Television, of course, has yet another dimension, and that's probing, that's depth. So I wish they'd leave those things alone, like For Whom the Bell Is Tolled, which was a massive effort, and I thought had some interesting moments in it.
But it was bad in one spot there. It showed them on the bridge where the attack was occurring, and the bridge especially lacked perspective.
Well, they bought that bridge, I think, from Gimbel's basement. It was part of a Lionel Train set, I think. Wow, that was the major problem
it
there.
It looked more like something from Abbey Rents, really. You see the guy throwing, you know, the scene there where in the Whom the Bell Tolls, and I forget who the actor was who did it in the movie, but he was always saying, I'm going to get myself a tank, you know, and he pulls the thing out and throws this thing. And it was almost like somebody was holding back his arm, like, oh, Charlie, you're going to throw it right through the set. So it's like he lobbed it over, and it went about 5 feet and blew up.
That was in the movie or the television show?
That's the television show. In the movie, I'm going to get myself a tank, and he threw this thing like...
In the movie, it was Hakim Temirov. I don't know who it was in the thing, but he kept saying, I don't provoke. That's the thing I remember, the lovely line, and I don't provoke.
Rod Serling is our in-person guest this morning, and we've got so many things we want to ask Rod about his own particular show, Twilight Zone, for instance. We'll get to that in just a minute. Before we do that, though, a word about Dodge.
I'm sitting in one of the hottest full-size cars built, a 1962 Dodge Dart 440. It's not like any Dodge you've ever seen or driven. It's a vital automobile. Everything about it makes you feel good. Take this fold-down center armrest. Gives you all the comfort of a bucket seat. This is a new size Dodge, a man-sized Dodge. It hasn't got a lot of senseless overhang. The important bigness is inside, where you can use it. It's a comfortable, high-performance automobile. It parks easy, steers easy. The buying's easy, too. The sticker price of a 62 Dodge is lower than a comparable model Ford or Chevrolet. See you around in a 62 Dodge.
That's right. See your Dodge dealer. There he goes right out of the studio. It's just Twilight Zone all over again, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling you. You see your Dodge dealer here in Southern California for the 1962 Dodge today.
Be brave. Buy one.
No, you don't have to be brave to buy one. Come on. 27 minutes after 9 on the KNX clock, 27 after 9. 60 degrees is the temperature. It was only supposed to get to 57 today. Weatherman says mostly, so I don't know, the weatherman is off again. With a few scattered showers or snow flurries predicted for the mountains, gusty winds here in town, and considerable cloudiness is what they were saying. And incidentally, if you're going to the mountains, the high at Lake Arrowhead today is going to be 36 degrees. And call Atlantic 79711 before you... leave to go up there, and they'll tell you whether the mountain roads are clear, whether it's snowing or what. Rod Serling, our in-person guest this morning. Rod, of course, is the producer of Twilight Zone.
No, right? I'm the so-called executive producer.
Well, who was the producer?
That's a titular title given like a wreath to somebody who owns part of the show. The workaday producer is an incredible guy named Buck Houghton. who produces the show.
Yeah, but every time I read something connected with Twilight Zone, it's Rod Serling that they're talking about.
Yeah, well,
we'd rather not get into that.
Well, let's not.
Buck hasn't been talking to you for quite a while.
No, that's true, and...
Well, it's a sore point. I'm sorry for bringing it up. We always manage to get one or two questions in there that make our guests uneasy. Let me ask you another question. If you had any, and this is a question that's been bandied around quite a bit lately, you talk about lack of sources for material. You go pretty far out with Twilight Zone. Have you had much trouble this season with rejected programs where they said you couldn't put it on for various reasons?
No, we've never had that problem, Bob, though that is, I gather, a problem extant with many shows.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't it Bus Stop that did a show the other night on Sunday?
They had Fabian as a sex maniac in the thing, and they said you couldn't put it on.
But they put it on.
It was a big bibliographical thing. What's the word I'm looking for?
No, it's me, Bob.
Well, forget it then. They put it on. Anyway, no, would that be wrong, bibliographical? It's terrible anyway. Over KNX, CBS Radio in Los Angeles, 1070 on your AM dial, 93.1 on your FM dial. Rod Serling is our hot seat guest today, and we're asking him some questions here. Anyway, the Bus Stop thing, true, it did go on. And a couple of the reviewers said all the fuss and clamor and whatnot, it really wasn't worth all the fuss and clamor.
I found it offensive.
You did find it offensive?
I frankly did, yeah. I thought this was sex for its own sake, predatory violence that was pure exhibitionism. I thought it was a lousy show. And if Fabian is listening, why, it's just been a rough night. It's very cold, and I'm sorry. But I didn't care for it at all.
Jack O'Brien in the Journal American said, well, one thing, his acting's as good as his singing.
Well,
and I read that
damned
and
by the faintest of praise, I guess.
I didn't know what he meant by that either.
Well, it's easy to not, Bob. I suppose there are many people who found it, you know, a very stirring, exciting, emotional excursion. I, for one, didn't. But that's what makes ball games, I suppose.
But you have never run into a sponsor or network resistance on any of
only,
your shows?
Well, not on the Twilight Zone. Only once we had a show where it took place on a British steamer.
Yeah.
And the captain had a line where he said, bring me up some tea to the bridge, which, you know, is a traditional thing with the British. They drink tea all the time.
Yeah.
Well, we had a sponsor who made instant coffee, and they wouldn't permit the mention of tea. They didn't make tea. So they made the captain say, bring him up some coffee. Well, of course, this was quite erroneous and was incorrect. So we changed it to sandwiches.
Oh,
I don't know
really?
What he drank. Seawater, I think.
Really?
Yeah, that's the only major problem. It's the only problem we've ever had on the show.
For goodness sake.
Except that they kept saying that I should look taller, and that's impossible. They used to say, I did one acting stint one time in my life. I've only acted once, Bob, on a Desi Lou show, and they kept saying, bring out the man maker. And this was like a cigar box about 4 inches high, and they made me stand on this thing because my head hit Keenan Wynn's belt buckle.
Yeah.
And I looked like kind of Mickey Rooney with dark hair. And I refuse to stand on this so-called man-maker because Alan Ladd's done very well at 5'6" all his life. Why should I, you know...
Actually, what is your height, Don?
5'5½".
Oh, that's nice.
He said proudly with a glint in his eye.
Well, look at Jack. And
look at Jack.
He carries it well. How much? Jack weighs 200 pounds. He's 5...
I don't...
Oh, jeez. They're having fun in that studio. Bob Crane interviewing the great Rod Serling.
You know, it's funny. I'm hearing some clips in here, too, that aren't from records. I think Stan Freberg did some clips just for Bob Crane's show. You know, the Be Brave Brian one. We said, wonderful, wonderful. That could be a clip.
Yep.
But then he says, Bob Crane says, not so wonderful. Well, that's not on the record.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's good.
My.
He's clever, witty.
Yep. And that was the short half of the half hour we have, and Rod Serling is throughout this as well. I can understand how somebody like this can certainly be number one in their market.
Oh, yeah.
And he also did disc jockeying when he was in the Army. He did that as well.
I'll be darned. Wasn't he an Army photographer? Well, never mind.
For a different show, maybe. I don't know.
Some kind of show. Keep show. Let's listen to this second half. This stuff is so good, I can't wait. This interview
yep.
with Rod Serling. Very enlightening and whoa. And takes us back to 1961.
Yep.
Will you have a cup of coffee?
Will it be?
29 before 9.
A good cup of coffee seems to be everything good that has ever happened to you. It is finding a silver dollar or seeing the sun come out after a spell of rain. It is the incense of domestic happiness. For a good cup of coffee turneth away wrath and bringeth in tenderness. To those who treasure this rich boon, this cup of kindness, may we say, we do too. At Hills Brothers, coffee is all we make. Won't you join us in a good cup of coffee?
Let's get together whenever, wherever the living is good. Cause that's when Hills Brothers coffee's at home.
A delicious cup of coffee every time with Hills Brothers Coffee, of course. Rod Serling is our in-person guest this morning, and we're asking Rod some pertinent questions about things we've had in our mind ever since Rod broke into the television business in 1949. What were you doing prior to then, Rod?
Radio, Bob.
What shows were you writing for then?
Oh, Grand Central Station and Again Stars Over Hollywood, Curtain Time. You know, those were those marvelous golden days when radio came on with dramatic shows at night.
What was the show that Barbara Luddy and...
That was Mr. First Nighter or something, wasn't it?
Oh, I love that. Barbara Luddy...
Here's your seat, Mr. First Nighter. Yeah.
And Olin Soule, and you'd
Olin
sit at
Soule.
Home, and you'd picture yourself in this lobby, and the guy would say, sitting down in front
that's
of trees.
Right. That's right. Well, first the cab pulled up, didn't it?
That's
the door
right.
Open.
That's right. The cab.
Here's your seat, Mr.
Jack has the original cab in there. Jack, would you bring in the cab, please? This is the First Nighter. This is for those of you not familiar with it. That's the fellow walking down the aisle, Jack. That's Olin Soule walking down the aisle. He used to lead people to their seats. The cab. Open the cab door there. You open it up. He'd say, "Your cab, sir." That's not the cab, Jack. And then the people would walk into the theater, and it was an old theater, actually, and they'd sit down in
there. It was an older cab, Bob, wasn't it?
Well, Jack's an old engineer. He only remembers those days. And then the curtain would descend. They'd always say, and now the curtain rises, and then they'd do the whole thing. And at the end of the first act, so they could get in their three commercials or whatever it was, they'd say, and as the curtain falls...
Oy vey.
Samuel Brunston presents Charlton Heston, Sophia Loren in El Cid.
And then the story would
you
begin.
You bought your honor with my sorrow.
There was no other way for me. The man you chose to love could do only what I did.
Did you think the woman you chose to love could do less than you?
But my love won't die.
Kill it.
You kill it! Tell me you don't love me.
Charlton Heston, winner of the Academy Award for his performance in Ben-Hur. Sophia Loren, acclaimed Best Actress of the Cannes Film Festival. Together, they bring new chemistry to a love that has lived through the ages. See the motion picture El Cid, directed by Anthony Mann.
Now, for the first time, someone dares tell this different story. You'll be shocked.
You'll be thrilled.
You'll laugh.
You'll cry.
You'll wish you stayed home.
Filmed in Super Technorama Technicolor. Produced in association with Deer Film Productions. El Cid. The greatest romance and adventure in 1,000 years.
That's right. Be sure to see El Cid, which begins an engagement at the Carthay Circle Theater December the 18th. Today being the 11th, we're just about a week away. Reserve seats now for the roadshow engagement of El Cid, starring Charlton Heston. 25 minutes before 10 on the KNX clock, leaving Rod Serling alone to have his Hills Brothers coffee for a moment here. We turn to the music of Johnny Klein and the Carolyn Bells, and for Christmas, Silver Bells. Silver Bells is done by Johnny Klein and the Carolyn Bells there, and A Christmas Sound Spectacular, it's called, the most beautiful rendition of that particular Christmas song. If you suddenly find yourself around the holidays here, imbibing perhaps a little bit too much, Jackie Chapman, our own engineer, had a little party over the weekend he was telling me about this morning. And to show you how much this guy had, we went out to breakfast this morning at 7 o'clock. I wore an overcoat, mind you. He went in his undershirt. He had so much alcohol in him, really. And he kept on saying, gee, it's warm, isn't it? Just terrible, terrible thing, Jack. You've got to cut out that drinking there. He's got a problem. Every time he passes What is the line there? Every time he passes, no, every time he walks down the street, he turns into a saloon. No, that's not the line. Forget it. The cold and flu season is here. So remember this. The one thing doctors consistently recommend to reduce the fever and relieve the pains of colds and flu is aspirin. It's what 9 out of 10 doctors themselves take, and all you got to do is ask them, and for a fee, they'll tell you. Bayer aspirin has instant flaking action, brings the fastest, gentlest relief you can get from the fever and painful discomforts of colds and flu. Have you ever had Bayer aspirin as one of your sponsors, Ron?
No, we haven't.
How did you miss them? That's a good one. You've, of course, seen their ad on television where they drop the water.
No, they drop the pill in the water, don't they?
No, they've got a new one now.
I've seen that.
They've got two things. They've got a Bayer aspirin, and they've got some unidentified thing, and they drop water on it, and they say instant flaking action. Notice how the Bayer aspirin...
We're sponsored by the unidentified thing, Bob.
Butter?
No, I'm kidding.
Is butter one of your sponsors? Do we have them?
It's the high-priced bread.
Oh, that's what it is, and they won't say what it is. But they never tell you what this other thing is, and the Bayer aspirin thing, the thing that doesn't have instant flaking action. It's a hockey puck, and that's the whole thing there. Now, remember, aspirin is what doctors consistently recommend to reduce the fever and relieve the pains. Aspirin is what 9 out of 10 doctors themselves take. The best aspirin you can buy is Bayer aspirin, so you be sure to get it today. Now, 20 and a half minutes before 10 on the KNX clock, the time, 20 and a half before 10. We promised 13 different people this morning we would ask you this question about a Twilight Zone that was on about a month or so ago. It was concerning fallout shelters. Now, on this, you must have had quite a bit of reaction.
We had 1,300 letters and cards inside of 2 days. I think we hit some kind of a nerve. It was a show called The Shelter, about a doctor who was the only guy in the neighborhood who had the presence of mind and the foresight to build a shelter.
Yeah.
And when there's a yellow alert sounding, he runs into the shelter with his wife and child, and all the neighbors are left high and dry, and they turn into animals. And... I used the show. I wrote it because I felt, number one, it had great immediacy. We've been talking at home, my wife and me, about the possibility of building a shelter.
Yeah.
And we were struck with the moral and ethical problem of what would happen if, you know, there were an alert sounding.
Yeah.
We got into our shelter happily because we built one, and neighbors with children came to the door and said, please let us in. Well, that was the problem. I can't answer it. I don't know what is the ethical rightness and justice of this. I haven't figured it out yet.
It is a very controversial thing because I saw a panel discussion just about a week or so ago on this, and they had some learned men on the panel, one gentleman with civil defense, another who was in the clergy, Catholic priest, a Jesuit priest, and they all had different opinions. One gentleman said in particular, until the government starts building them themselves, public shelters, I can't see where this immediacy is here. You know, why should I go out and spend $2,000 or $3,000 to build one if the government isn't bothering. This was his feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine when I saw your show that night, which was this problem in its most dramatic terms. Here was a family in their shelter, as you said, and here were the neighbors. What do? You carry a gun with you, shoot them off, or what do you do? And your show finally ended. It was a false alarm.
It was a yellow alert, which turned out to be nothing. But I think the essence of our philosophical comment at the end was that for the human race to survive, it has to remain civilized.
Now, was that the ending that you wanted to take, or did you want to leave it a little bit stronger than
No, because I'm not one of those, quote, knowledgeable men, Bob.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was up in the air about it, morally and ethically. I didn't know how to end that thing. I didn't know what position... philosophically I could take.
Are you yourself building a shelter?
No, we're not now.
Were you?
For a while, we thought very seriously of it. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
And now we've decided that, no, we're not going to build it.
Why?
Well, for very realistic, you know, stringently realistic reasons, that it's my feeling now that if we survive, what do we survive for? What kind of a world do we go into? You know, if it's rubble and poison water and unedible food and my kids have to live like wild beasts, I'm not particularly sure I want to survive in that kind of a world. This is the happy show, Bob, and yak it up again, Bob.
No, but the reason I'm asking, this week happens to be the Bill of Rights week, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yeah.
And this is what we're all fighting for, supposedly, and which is a serious subject in itself. You can't joke around about the Bill of Rights. And no, I just wanted to get your own opinion. What do you think of the Bill of Rights?
Well, I'm delighted.
You think
wonderful having this chat, Bob. And I'm glad you asked me that. Yeah. No, this week, starting as of yesterday, does commemorate the Bill of Rights, which are the first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution.
Yeah.
And it's something that, you know, it becomes kind of unseasonable and a little bit overly sentimental at times to recollect the nature of our country. And I don't think it's unhealthy to reflect that this is a pretty incredible nation, and that unlike most nations on the face of this earth, we are protected by the Bill of Rights.
You know, the funny thing is, when you start getting sentimental about this country, so many times somebody will say, oh boy, is he getting corny now. This is a common thing, you know.
Yeah, as I say, you know, suddenly it becomes a little bit esoteric and a little idiotic to recollect what it means, and I don't think
it's a shame.
I don't think it's either corny or ham-boned to do some recollecting.
You got a point there, Rod, and I didn't mean to be so glum or morbid.
That's
about
all right, Bob.
Really, because it is a problem. For instance, I brought up a subject one day on the show here, Rod, about fallout shelters. Now, taking it for instance, you build a fallout shelter for you and your wife. It only holds two.
We got two children. That makes it a little bit...
All right, then, well, all right, let's suppose that. Here's Rod Serling with his wife and two children. You have built a fallout shelter that only holds four. Comes an attack. There's a knock on the door. It's Bridget Bardot. Now, the question is, how long will it take you to get your wife and kids out of the shelter?
Now, science discovers that washing dishes with a new miracle product can actually benefit fingernails.
I'm at.
Here are the facts. Independent laboratory tests prove...
Jack.
Frolic with Mirasol promotes healthy nail growth.
Oh, wait,
gives
Jack.
Nails more gloss.
Why did he leave?
Makes nails 48% more flexible. Give your nails a beauty treatment. Get dishes beautifully clean with Frolic. Only dishwashing liquid with Mirasol.
I thought it was a...
Don't delay. Get Frolic now.
I thought it was an intelligent question. He just runs out like wild banshee. That's the way he wants to work this thing. Over KNX CBS Radio in Los Angeles, 1070 on your AM dial, 93.1 on your FM dial. This is Bob Crane with Rick. It's actually Rod Serling is still with us here. But I'm being facetious now, bringing up such a... There's no... she's in France, you know. The problem would never occur. Marilyn Monroe here. Marilyn Monroe's in the country. All right, Jack, there's another question for you. Marilyn Monroe shows up, and who would you call? You know, Joe DiMaggio? He's with her. I see. All right. 14 minutes before 10 on the KNX clock, the time. That answers the problem right there, if he's with her. 60 degrees, the KNX temperature right now. It's only supposed to be up to 57 today, and it just goes to show you, you can't believe anybody nowadays. Showers or snow flurries are predicted for the mountains today, mostly sunny today and tomorrow, and gusty winds at times with a temperature around 57 degrees. And as I said, it's already above that. In talking about mail to your show, now you received quite a bit of mail on this fallout shelter program that you did. What, in your mind, what type of person writes to a show? Now, you must get mail on most of your shows because they're a little bit way out. In fact, it's the Twilight Zone, the name of it. That's the whole idea of the show.
Well, like many shows, our mail falls into two very specific categories, Bob.
Yeah.
They're very bright, astute, intelligent people who have a point of view and who let us know it.
Yeah.
And then there's the wild fringe group, the lunatic group. And these people, I think, write therapeutically. I think they are sick, and they write compulsively, and they write strange things. Now,
like what?
For example, the reaction to the Shelters show.
Yeah.
We got considerable mail from very odd people who said it was communistic, that it was defeatist, that it presupposed that we're going to be bombed, and that in doing so we were making a great disservice to the cause of defense and national security. We get an awful lot of mail like that. But this harks back again to the Bill of Rights Week. Amendment 1 stating that there should be no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of people to assemble peaceably. And I'm delighted. Let them write anything they want. I don't think we're in trouble in this country if we let people say, talk, think, comment. This isn't our problem. It's when we start to abridge that.
But
we can start being afraid.
Do you notice when people write nasty letters to you? I've noticed this, and if you read the mail yourself, you'll notice this, that when they write things like, I hate you, will you get out of town, you bum, and you notice they press hard?
On the pencil.
On the pencil.
Always, yeah.
It's like this, and you get a splotch like that, like they've been crying while they're doing it. You know, terrible person, yeah. And I can picture, really, many times I'll read a letter like this, and I'll picture the person that wrote this letter as being in a cold water flat somewhere.
Well, usually they're very unhappy.
Unhappy? Kind of, and they sit in this cold water flat, and they listen to radio, watch television, they write letters, and this is their whole being right now. I don't know who supports them. And they sit there and write these terrible things, like, Rod Serling, I watched you tonight, you're too short. And, I hate short people. You know, they have nothing else to pick on, because that show that night happened to be a happy show. For instance, we got a letter when I first came out here, and somebody said to me, why, when you have a guest, Bob, must you tell them your history? we'd like to hear about them. But really, this has...
Tell me about yourself, Bob.
That's enough talk about me. Let's talk about you, Rod Serling. What do you think of me? It's 11 minutes before 10. No, they'll write these. When we first came here, one person used to write, you idiotic imbecile. Get out of town, you bum, you terrible person. And they wrote all the time. It was terrible. Idiotic imbecile. Every day there's a letter and card, and they used to press down on the thing, and I picture the person as being in a cold water flat and, half out of their mind. And one day I decided to do something. My rating was low at the time, too. Have you ever had low rating problems?
Often.
What you do is you have the people, instead of waiting to be called, have them call the rating service. It's the simplest
thing. Oh, I see.
And
very
I did that,
interesting.
I did that one day, and I had the people call Pulse. And it was a great idea, and the boss came in that morning. He says, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I said, I've got people calling Pulse. I'm going to get the rating up. He said, that's not the way the game works, you idiotic imbecile. And all of a sudden, I knew who was mailing the letters.
How much easier life is. You can bend it and twist it and shape it and smooth it and heat it and...
And mold that Reynolds Wrap to fit the tightest corners of your pans. It'll catch all the drippings. Keep those pans really clean.
Right.
But be sure to get the genuine Reynolds Wrap, the aluminum foil that's oven-tempered for flexible strength.
Yes. Reynolds Wrap. 9 minutes before 10 on the KNX clock. 9 minutes before 10. And we do want to thank our in-person guest for this morning, Rod Serling, for stopping by. Rod, I'm terribly sorry we're running out of time here in about a minute. We've got 13 other things we've got to do. This always happens, and especially when we have such an interesting guest as you. I hope I didn't bore you with my stories here.
Not at all. I've enjoyed it, Bob.
You think we might make a Twilight Zone out of this whole thing?
This is a Twilight Zone, Bob.
Rod Serling, our in-person guest for this morning. And best of luck with the show.
Thank you very much.
If you get any more of that nasty mail, just let us know. I know who it is that's right. It's the boss. You ever see our boss? He's got a cold water flat downtown. When one compact car gains 1 million happy owners in just 2 short years, that is news, and that's a Falcon record this year. The hard-to-beat Falcon is certainly not hard to get. Your nearby Ford dealers delivering the full line with no delays, 2-door and 4-door sedans, the luxurious Falcon Futura, an all-new Falcon Squire wagon, plus 7 other wagons for a total of 13 wonderful Falcons. The way the Falcons are coming in, he can afford to make you a better deal than ever before. In fact, your Ford dealer today is losing $1,000 on every sale. The only way he can stay in business is through volume. So don't decide on any compact before you've seen and test-driven the Falcon. Compare the low, low price, lowest for any 6-passenger car. See how much more is standard on a Falcon. The best compact deal in town. Choose your Falcon now at your nearby Ford dealers of Southern California. I think the background music is a little bit loud. Of the band and the dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, a rather appropriate song for this Christmas season. And speaking of sugar plums, from the tropical island of Trinidad comes a flavor secret that puts extra goodness into everything you cook. Angostura, a century-old secret blend of delicate cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, tropical fruits, and chicken fat and booze. A symphony of flavors in one bottle that adds a tropical jungle or tangle or tingle or forget it. Forget the whole thing.
writes these commercials? He presses much too hard on the pencil. Add a tantalizing taste and a tempting fragrance to almost every dish. Stew, soup, cream dishes, Angostura bitters, available, by the way, at Giordano Markets in Santa Barbara in the section where you find table sauces and seasonings. It's a fact. You've probably had Angostura bitters on your shelf for years. Get a booklet now that tells how to use the stuff. The secret, it won't last forever that way. The secret of better taste, with more than 100 famous recipes, write to me, Bob Crane, KNX, and I'll send the Angostura booklet out immediately. Rod Serling, our in-person guest from Twilight Zone this morning. This is Bob Crane. Till tomorrow morning, the same time. Have a real nice Monday and bye.
This is KNX, AM and FM, CBS Radio. And
oh, I would love to hear a ton more of this stuff. Wow.
Yeah. He was good. He was good.
Radio was so much fun back then.
This
illustrates how I've always said, Dave, there's no radio personalities anymore like that.
Yes, exactly. You know, it just and having the personalities do the commercials and having fun with them, that was all part of the gig. You know, you got paid a little extra to do the commercials, but to have fun with them at the same time, make light of them in some cases. You know, it's it was golden, Dale.
Yeah, and some of these products, I think today they take themselves too seriously.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They would never allow anybody to do anything resembling mockery of their product.
Well, exactly. Well, and even in the 40s, you know, Henry Morgan constantly got fired by sponsors for doing just that, making fun of his sponsors. He was vicious to Eversharp with the Schick injector blades, and made all kinds of hilarious bits about them, and how he got along with away with that as long as he did. But you know, people love that kind of thing, and maybe sponsors don't, because they, like you said, they take their products too seriously. But
the
people love that. Yeah,
as many people do, not us.
Yep. Not us. Hey, while we're at we get to jump to the next show, we talked about him playing the drums. Should we play? Well, we have a couple clips of him playing the drums. Shall we? Shall we throw one in?
Why, it couldn't hurt.
He got up to Bob Crane.
Scroll.
Up to Bob Crane, and we find a couple there. And you choose.
I gotta get there. Here we go.
Hi, ho, ho.
Yeah, Bob Crane on the drums.
Yep. Got a couple of them there.
All right, here we go.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Crane.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but it's best. You've been looking where you should have been imagining. But now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what you'll do.
No idea why I said that.
Yeah, I think that one was from the video clip. It didn't say where it was, but because of the gals and their skirt sizes, I think it was the Dean Martin show.
That would not surprise me. That could be those gold diggers.
And Dean Martin had everybody on his show. So that part wouldn't surprise me either.
Bob Crane had everybody too. But I digress. Oh, jeez. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it didn't matter which set. Never mind. Yeah. Whoops. Almost said no. Anyway. It is interesting. There's some YouTube things about the Bob Crane's life and strange twist it took towards the end. And it looked like he was starting to straighten himself back and getting back into the Hollywood favor again, possibly. And then he was murdered. So
that was, yeah, that'll make a sharp end to any career pretty much. But
unless you're Casper the Friendly Ghost, there's not a whole lot that you can do after that.
Not a whole lot, but I understand that towards the end also, he when his career was spiraling downward, he was doing some dinner theater.
Yes. Yeah, even through Ohio here. I think he was part of the Kennelly group that would go throughout Ohio, different theaters, or stopped here in Akron, stopped they had one in Toledo, they had one in Dayton, and they would take the same play, but they would go on the road to these different towns and do it for a week at a time and get out from the television grind. And that brought a lot of people. And Paul Lynn was here. I'm trying to think. The Smothers Brothers did a show that was a play. And it's just so different from what they did in television that they kind of enjoyed doing that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yep, and CW pointed out earlier that Bob Crane was in and maybe it was for dinner theater, a version of Arsenic and Old Lace.
It may have been, and they may have even filmed that afterwards. But I also, I do remember the Bob Crane show she mentioned earlier, and it did not last very long. Television didn't have very much patience back then, especially in the 70s. If it got bad enough ratings, it would disappear after three shows.
Yeah.
That's how networks were back then.
And yep. There were a lot of almost and maybe even should have beens. But
I can think of some shows that should have only lasted three shows and they lasted a whole season. But
yeah, that's true. Like ours. No. I think we passed the one season mark some time ago.
Yeah, we did. They can't stop us now. We're still rolling uphill. I mean,
oh god,
going uphill.
Press everyone. They can't stop us. That was kind of threatening. They can't stop us now.
Yep, that sounds like. Hey, we got the. We won't have time for both, but we certainly have time for Bob Crane, Zero Hour, with Rod Serling, by the way.
Yeah.
Rod Serling was the host. Bob Crane was a star. I just read something interesting about Zero Hour. Now, the first year, they were like novellas. They were five-part half-hour stories, which equaled one story. And what happened was people lost out because if they didn't catch one of the parts, they were completely lost going into the next night. And, you know, because you missed a whole half hour's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So the second season, they shortened it to, they took a guest for a whole week, but they have five different half-hour stories, or 23-minute stories, thereabouts. And I guess when the second season was coming out and they had announced that they would all be half-hour, they were just waiting for people to call and say, hey, we'll pick up your show, because it was actually... I really liked. I've listened to a couple of them. We should do one weekend. We should do one of the early Zero Hours. It was the full five parts, and we could do three parts on Saturday and two parts, you know, three parts on Friday and two parts on Saturday, and get the whole story in. I thought they're very compelling. I mean, one had Richard Crenna and what's his name, Mel Cooley. Mel Cooley from the Dick Van Dyke Show, Richard Deacon,
yes,
and had a lot of stars in there too. One whole hour or one whole week was a episode starring Patty Duke and John Astin. And so they had Howard Duff was always was in that first one too, I think. So it had some great actors in there, but the stories were five, you know, were five parters. If you missed any of that, you didn't want to tune in for the rest of the week. So going to five individual shows with a particular star that week, that worked out better for the show.
Yep. And this one has a great title. Murder is a Work of Art.
There you go.
There you go.
And it comes to us from, come on, it's here, it's here. It is from July 2nd. No. Yeah, from July 2nd of 1970 and 4.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to the Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. Today, Glenn Hall Taylor's eerie drama of mummies and revenge. Murder is a work of art. Starring Bob Crane. In the Mutual Broadcasting System presentation of The Zero Hour.
Brought to you by the Ford Motor Company and Lazy Boy Recliners. This is The Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
This is Hugh Downs with another car buyer's report from Ford. Car size and fuel economy are important considerations today, but so is the total cost of ownership, which involves purchase price, trade-in value, and operating economy. And Ford feels that if you compare mid-size cars, you will choose Ford Torino. Take operating economy. Torino offers gas-saving steel-belted radial ply tires standard, runs on regular gas, and has a 26.5-gallon fuel tank. That's 20% more capacity than its leading sales competitor. And to compare some scheduled maintenance costs, you'll find that in the course of 50,000 miles, compared to its closest sales competitor, Torino's chassis is scheduled to be lubricated only once to their 8 times. Spark plugs are scheduled to be replaced only half as often. Everyone says compare. Ford says compare not only the cars, but the total cost of owning a car.
The closer you look, the better we look.
Night. The city sleeps. In the darkened Civic Art Museum, the cardinals, warriors, princes, and madonnas of Rembrandt, Van Dyck, Vermeer, and Picasso peer down from the walls in the dim light, while Remington's cast-in-bronze Indians ride in the shadows. An aged watchman's footsteps echo through the main corridor. Arriving at the end of a long marble hall, he pauses, preparatory to retracing his steps. When suddenly, as he looks idly about,
help! Help me!
Who are you?
Oh, thank heaven you're here.
What's the matter, young lady?
In there, in that room.
What is it? What's in there?
A mummy.
Naturally, that's the Egyptian room.
But this mummy, at least a figure wrapped in cloth, it came walking toward me.
Oh, I'm afraid you're imagining things. Come on, let's take a look.
Oh, no. Oh, no, you mustn't. It might be a ghost. Oh,
come along, young lady. I'll show you there are no ghosts in this museum. Come on, come on.
Well, all right, but...
How did you get in here at this hour of the night?
I was doing some research work. I must have fallen asleep.
Nobody came into the room to warn you we were closing?
No.
when I awakened, it was dark. I gathered up my papers and things and started to leave when I saw that figure.
Is it your room here?
Yes. Oh, but please be careful.
Why? Mummies are very friendly as far as I'm concerned. Never give me any trouble. Here, I'll flip the wall switch. You just stay there if you're scared.
Do you see anything?
No ghosts in here, young lady. But there's a dead man on the floor. Oh, dear young lady, now don't faint on me. So I fetched her a glass of water, and as soon as she seemed to have herself under control, I called the police.
Glad you did. I'm Inspector Ostro. This is my partner, Detective Wendover.
My name's Abington.
How do you do, sir?
The body's right in there, gentlemen.
Thanks. You'll be around when we need you.
Oh, sure will.
What's it look like to you, Ted?
Judging by the blood on his shirt, the wounds in his back. Yeah, maybe I'll pull his shirt up. Yeah, there.
Sure doesn't look like a bullet wound. A knife, maybe.
Yeah, let's turn him over.
You need any help?
No. Let me get this shirt open in front.
Whatever it was, it went right clean through him.
Yeah, looks like it, Barney.
Hey, Ted, there's a wallet sticking out of his inside coat pocket. Hand it to me, will you? I'll take a gander in it while you're looking him over.
Sure. Here.
Thanks. What do you suppose the weapon was?
I don't know. The hole looks too small for a sword or a spear. You know something? His face looks familiar.
Yeah, kind of vaguely. Hey, Ted, here's some things. There's a... The Guild membership cards, Actors Equity, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, Screen Actors Guild. Hey, his name's Bruno Karn, sure.
That's why he looked familiar. He stars in those horror movies that are so popular nowadays.
Yeah, you never know whether he's going to play a guy with two heads or a robot in a spaceship.
Call the watchman, will you, Barney? Abington, I think his name is.
Yeah, that's it.
Mr. Abington? Will you come here a moment, please?
Yeah, right away, sir. Well, what can I do for you?
No word about the coroner yet?
No, sir. By the way, there are several newspapermen outside.
They didn't lose any time.
Well, they didn't come because of the murder. They claimed that about 8:30 they were tipped off that a girl was locked in here and that she said she'd seen a ghost. Now, that'd be the girl waiting in the curator's office.
8:30? That's before the body was found.
That's right.
We better have a talk with that girl right now. Show us to the curator's office, will you please, Mr. Abington?
Oh, glad to. Just follow me.
My name is Grace. Grace Phillips. Phillips is spelled with two L's.
Yes, ma'am. How about your address, please?
Oh, it's 207 Christopher Street.
As I understand it, you were locked in the museum after hours. You fell asleep and you woke up.
Oh, no.
Isn't that what you told the watchman?
Yes, but it wasn't the truth. Why did I ever let myself get tangled up in this thing?
Now might be a good time to tell the truth, Miss Phillips.
Yes, of course. I was hired to come here tonight.
Hired?
I'm an actress. I was paid $150 to come here.
What for?
I don't know exactly. My agent called me, asked me if I'd like to work tonight, and I said yes, and he sent me to a man named Freeland who works for a motion picture company.
What's the name of the company, ma'am?
Avon Jewel.
Freeland hired you to come here?
Yes. I was told to report to the basement entrance of the museum at 8 o'clock and to ring the knife bell. A man met me. I don't know his name. I've never seen him before. And he brought me to the Egyptian section.
Then what?
He told me to wait until I heard the watchman approach. He said he was due at 9. Then as soon as the watchman showed up, I was to scream, which I did.
Yeah, so the watchman said.
Then I was to run to him and say that I'd just seen a mummy walking toward me.
Which you also did.
Yes.
Did you know there was a dead man in that Egyptian room?
Oh, I didn't even go into that room. I'd been waiting in the corridor as the man told me to.
That man? What happened to him?
I don't know. He left me standing there.
I just thought of something, Ted.
Hmm?
It seems to me I remember that Bruno Karns also worked for Avon Jewel Studios.
Avon Jewel made a whole series of horror pictures with Bruno Karns. But what's he got to do with this?
That's his body in the Egyptian room.
Oh, no. Oh, that poor guy. He was so nice to me once when I did a bit part in one of his pictures. For a big star, he wasn't the least bit stuck up. Everybody liked him.
Well, at least one person didn't. Barney, with Bruno Carnes and Freeland tied in with the same studio plus the story this young lady has told us, this just might be some sort of a publicity stunt that backfired.
Could be.
Barney, get on the horn. Call homicide.
Okay.
Tell them to pick up Freeland and get him in here as fast as they can.
Hi, this is Jim Backus with a special announcement about an exciting Lazy Boy chair sale taking place at your Lazy Boy dealers now. Lazy Boy reclining chairs of your choice are available at unheard-of savings for a limited time only. Treat yourself and your family to a lifetime of comfort and beauty. Once you do, you'll wonder how you ever relax without one. Get America's comfort favorite, a Lazy Boy chair now. See your Lazy Boy dealer today. Run in there. He'll be glad to see you. Yes, he will.
Listen to a tough summer wash. The machine's loaded with sweat socks, beach towels. These things aren't just dirty, they smell. If you want to make sure it comes out clean and fresh, pour Lysol brand disinfectant in your washing machine. Lysol cuts way down on germs, eliminates odors. Especially important if you wash in cold water. Lysol, the brown bottle in the red and yellow box. The fast, easy, effective way to cut down on germs. Make your whole wash smell fresh and clean every time you wash.
You're 17, 18. You've graduated from high school. You want to make something of yourself. But you don't have that something to make it with, like money for 4 years of college. What do you do? Well, you don't need 4 years of college to get a good job. Today, there's a crying need for technicians in exciting fields like oceanography, electronic data processing, health service, environmental control, forestry, and many others. Technicians earn twice the salary of the average high school graduate. Some even make more than four-year college graduates. All you need is a year or two of technical training. To learn how you can become a technician, send for our free booklet. It's called 25 Technical Careers. Write Careers, Washington, D.C., 20202. If you can't afford 4 years of college, write Careers, Washington, D.C., 20202, and make something of yourself.
I can't even afford recess at college. Does college have recess? I don't know.
Ah, you're backing away. Get closer to your phone there, Dale.
There we go. How's that? Better?
There we go. There we go.
There's the big mouth you know and love.
Yeah. And so we got an interesting story. Bob Crane is a cop this time. So from a cop writer to a cop to from Hogan's Heroes to a writer to a cop from a disc jockey. It all began way back when.
And sort of a photographer. But.
Hey, you know what? We aren't going to have time for the other feature, so I did want to mention, of course, in the first commercial there for, what was it, Ford or whatever it was, Hugh Downs was the announcer. Hugh Downs grew up right here in Akron, Ohio, on a street that was mostly cut out down by the football field where St. Vincent St. Mary's is. And one of his first broadcast jobs was at WLAO, Lima, Ohio. So a lot of Ohio connection to Hugh Downs, who went on to such an amazing career, ending up spending, the last 12, 15 years of it with the magazine program 2020.
Ah, okay.
On ABC. So, started right here in Akron, Ohio.
Akron.
Or Akron. Yeah, when you get it out of town, you go, are you from Akron, Ohio? How about Akron, you know?
Yeah. Not that hard. Akron.
A-K-R-O-N. Akron. Okay.
I'm surprised they don't say acorn, but that's dyslexia. That's a whole other story.
That is another story.
Bob Crane tonight. Funny guy.
He is a funny guy. I mean, you could just tell that from amazing his ratings. But like you said, I love going back because it was just so much fun listening to Bob Crane on the radio.
Yeah. Radio in general, folks, was so much more fun in the 60s. I caught the tail end of it here in Cleveland. It was Wixie 1260.
That's right. Yeah.
And they had a ton of personality jocks.
Yeah.
High energy, good
yeah.
times, good fun.
Just now they don't care what your ratings are. If you cost too much, they'll just cut you loose. It's
yep.
amazing. I've had friends who were in radio up to that point, and it didn't matter that when they finished, they were, you know, like number one in their books, or they rose it by so many points. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
All that mattered
yep.
was how much money are they making.
Yep.
What a terrible, and if you're with that company, they own your name and likeness and can basically have you be broadcasting from anywhere instead of where you are.
Yep.
So it's a whole different creature today, not near as much fun.
No. And I think that really stifles the creativity of them what would broadcast well in that venue. But what are you going to do? Time marches
yep.
on. And with time marching on, let's wrap up. Murder is a Work of Art from Zero Hour. Starring Bob Crane, hosted by the one and only Rod Serling. He's short.
The 5'4" and a half.
Yes. The police just arrived with Mr. Freeland. I brought him in.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Abington. Come on in, Mr. Freeland. I'm Detective Wendover. This is Inspector Ostro. Miss Phillips, I believe you know.
Yes. Look, what is this all about? On the way over, the officer in the squad car told me Carnes had been murdered, but I don't know anything about it.
We thought you might be able to help us.
Well, I don't know.
Is this the man who hired you, Miss Phillips?
Yes.
Now, was it for a publicity stunt, Mr. Freeland?
Yes, Bruno Carnes had just finished making a picture called The Mummy Murders. It opens here in town tomorrow. My story was going to be that she gets locked in, and by a strange coincidence, Bruno Carnes gets locked in, too. She meets him, he wants her for a part in his next picture, and instead of being an item in a movie column, it gets a front-page spread.
I didn't know, Inspector.
That's right. I thought it would play better if she didn't, though. I had to tell Carnes, of course.
Did you meet her here tonight?
No, I had to cover a sneak preview. My assistant met her.
Was he a tall, red-headed man?
Yes.
Can you prove that you were at that preview?
Yes, Sherlock, I can.
Where's your assistant now?
I don't know. He might still be in the basement.
Miss Phillips, you say you didn't see Mr. Carnes.
No, never.
Do you know how to get to this basement, Mr. Freeland?
Yes, I got the business manager of the museum to show me around after I got his permission to stage this stunt.
Would you mind showing me around down there?
Not at all.
Good. Barney, stay here with Miss Phillips. I'm going to check out the basement.
Freeland, you scared me bursting in like that.
What's the matter?
Wait, did he come back here?
Who?
The inspector.
No, what happened?
I lost him down in the basement. It's dark down there. It was right after he found my assistant's hat and he saw the blood on the floor.
Blood?
Well, there were blood stains just inside the basement door. The inspector said there were marks that looked like a body had been dragged along the floor. He was following the marks. I had my back to him and I heard him call out.
What do you mean, call out?
Like he was calling for help.
You dope. Why didn't you say so right away? Come on, take me down there. Sure is dark down here. Wait a second, let me turn on my flashlight. You see anything?
Just an empty room.
Ted? Ted?
How about this corridor here?
That's worth a try.
Maybe he found his way out of this maze of rooms.
Yeah, maybe. But what about that call for help?
Maybe he was just calling out to locate me.
Maybe.
What's that on the floor at the end of the corridor? Throw the light down there.
Looks like a body. Come on.
It is a body.
Oh, no. It's Ted. I'm still trying to reconstruct what happened to you.
Well, I was following those marks along the floor in the basement because I was positive someone had dragged a body along there. I followed them to the end of the corridor, and sure enough, the body was there. A tall, red-headed guy.
My assistant. Was he dead?
I'm fairly certain he was. I thought so when I bent over to examine him, but before I could be positive, I got it on the back of the head.
Who is it?
Abington, the watchman.
Come on in.
The doctor you phoned for is down at the main entrance.
I don't think I'll need him, but you'd better tell the doctor to stick around, Abington. Even if I don't need him, Mr. Freeland's assistant may when we find him. I think he's still alive.
Okay, sir.
Now, what was that about Freeland's assistant being alive?
I thought you said earlier that you were pretty sure he was dead.
You did, Ted. Now, what about the remark you made to Abington just now?
Well, when I was trailing the dragged body, the marks indicated that whoever was dragging it had stopped and gone into a room on the left-hand side of the corridor. After I'd recovered from that wallop on the head and you fellows came back upstairs here, I returned and checked that room.
You find anything?
It turned out to be Abington's living quarters. In snooping around, I found an old scrapbook. Seems the old boy was a prominent actor in his youth. In fact, he'd worked with Bruno Karn's father, also a well-known actor.
Yes, incidentally, you may not know it, but the museum has quite a theatrical collection. Karn's father contributed a lot of its artifacts, his personal belongings.
I know. And I noticed, too, that the Karn's items, costumes, wigs, manuscripts, so forth, had on more than one occasion been vandalized.
Well, that's right. The newspapers made quite a thing of it at the time.
Which didn't hurt the box office of the younger Karn's films, right?
Well, if you're hinting that anything like that would be deliberate on the part of...
I wasn't implying anything like that, Freeland. What I thought was more interesting was the fact that Abington seemed so preoccupied with news items devoted to the vandalizing of the Karn's artifacts.
What are you getting at?
That remark you made to Abington about Mr. Freeland's assistant being alive. It was bait, wasn't it?
Bait?
Bait. The Watchman is tied into this in some way.
You suspect him of the murder of Bruno Karns and Freeland's assistant?
I might, if I knew he had a motive. So, let's see if we can find one.
Are you sure you want to take a sloppy Joe for lunch, Bobby?
Yes, Mom.
No, Bobby, not unless you take a soap and water to go, too.
Soap and water? In my lunch pail? It'll ruin everything.
When you want soap and water to go, you want wash and dry. They refresh while you scrub, get you clean like soap and water, and they don't fall apart like napkins can.
You mean wash and dry can do anything soap and water can do?
That's right.
Let me see you blow bubbles with it.
Wash and dry. Soap and water to go.
This is Jim Backus with news about the most comfortable experience of a lifetime. A Lazy Boy reclining chair. It's ideal for apartments, living rooms, dens, family rooms. Lazy Boy is as beautiful as it is comfortable. Available in any style you can imagine and in hundreds of decorator fabrics and vinyls. Make your favorite room a haven of gracious living. See your Lazy Boy dealer today. Hurry up. He's waiting. Run down there. Go. Yes, indeed.
All right, today we're going to make the apple sauce. All right?
Okay, keep your head back, Deidre. Don't you touch that, Deidre. You pin them.
Yes, she can.
Lisa, you've got 12 feet of water. Are you all right?
No.
People working with girls' clubs can make a difference. This is Carol Burnett asking you to help your local girls' club or write to Girls Clubs of America, Box 35, Grant Nichols Station, New York 10017, to help get one started. You can make a difference.
Want to be a physical education?
You know what you have to do?
Good luck.
All that science.
Don't get me down.
No chance of the Watchman being down here in the basement already, is there?
No, Freeland will keep him occupied for a few minutes asking more questions about what happened tonight.
You said you found the body at the end of the corridor where we found you.
Yeah. Obviously, whoever it was dragged it away after he slugged me. Hang your flashlight over there, will you?
Yeah.
Let's see where that leads.
Hey, this is a real labyrinth down here with all these storerooms and cubicles. Hey, here's a room we didn't see before.
Feel for a light switch.
Yeah, here's one.
Nothing. Wait.
What?
Look where I got the flashlight beam. The drag marks lead to that door over there.
Yeah, I see them.
Let's take a look.
Boy, that's a bright light.
It certainly is illuminating. Hey, look over there.
Hey, the red-headed guy. I wonder if he's... Oh, he's a goner, Ted.
I thought so. Okay, leave him just as he is. Anything behind that big crate over there?
No, nothing.
Okay, let's duck behind it. If whoever wants to be sure Freeland's assistant is dead comes in to check, his back will be toward us as he faces the corpse. I'll give the cue. You step out that side, flip on the light. I'll step from behind the box on the other side, and we'll have him covered.
Okay. I'll close the door. You get behind the crate, and I'll switch off the light and join you.
Hope we don't have to wait too long. This place stinks of mothballs.
We've been down here quite a while now. If the guy is coming, it should be pretty soon.
This may be it. Now, hold it, Mr. Abington. Hands over your head. Frisk him, Barney.
Give me that rapier, Abington, and stand still.
Wouldn't have done you any good to stab him anyway. He's already dead.
You trapped me.
Seems to me you're somewhat rapier happy, Mr. Abington. Your long, slender steel blade went all the way through Bruno Carnes, and it seemed to work very efficiently on your latest victim. Why the rapier, Mr. Abington?
Why? You ask why the rapier? Do you know what Bruno Carnes' father did to me? He ended my career on the stage when I was only a young man.
All right, calm down, Mr. Abington. How was that?
We were on the stage fencing when he deliberately lunged at me with a rapier. He wounded me so badly I was bedridden for years.
But it must have been an accident.
Accident? He was green with envy.
But why Mr. Freeland's assistant?
Because he saw me trying to dispose of the rapier in the basement. I killed Bruno Carnes because he was the son of the man I hated. He who dies by the sword shall perish by the sword.
Or maybe by the gas chamber.
Barney?
Yeah. I hope you noticed. Mr. Abington has definitely established a motive.
Look, you don't have to sell me on them. I know all about them.
You know everything about these Ford pickups I'm selling?
Sure. I know about Ford's twin I-beam front suspension.
Uh-huh.
I know you get front disc brakes, standard.
But do you know we give you a choice of an economical 6 or a 1 of 3 V8?
Sure.
You know about Ford's all-new Super Cab? The only two-door pickup with the extra room for a full back seat?
Super Cab?
Ford's Super Cab pickup. It seats a family of 6 in sedan-like comfort.
I didn't know that.
Or did you know that Super Cab's optional full-width rear seat folds flat to make a load floor?
Yeah?
Or that you can get optional facing jump seats that fold out of the way? Or with no rear seats at all, you get a full 44 cubic feet of extra storage space?
I didn't know that either.
That's it. Ford's new Super Cab. Like all Ford pickups, it works like a truck, rides like a car.
That I knew.
Ford's new Super Cab. It's news even to people who thought they knew all about Ford pickups. See it now at your local Ford dealer.
I'm Rod Serling. Close your eyes, exercise your imagination, and join us again on our next presentation of The Zero Hour.
Murder is a Work of Art was adapted for radio by Glenn Hall Taylor. Bob Crane was heard as Ted Ostro. Featured in the cast were Julie Bennett, Marvin Miller, Herb Ellis, and Mike Rye. Zero Hour, created by J.M. Colas, directed by Don Hills, is produced in Hollywood for the Mutual Broadcasting System by Radio Productions Incorporated. Music is composed and conducted by Stanley D. Hoffman, Rochelle Sherman Associate Producer. This has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
I think Rod Serling hits it on the head with regard to radio in his intro slash outro. Close your eyes. Use your imagination.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, looking up here, Dale, he was a busy guy, even after Hogan's Heroes. But looking here, he did, I'm just saying, Lucy Show, The Red Skelton, Arsenic and Old Lace. I didn't realize he was in 62 episodes of the Donna Reed Show as Dr. Dave Kelsey.
Yeah.
He did 3 episodes of Love American Style, Doris Day Show, an episode, I do remember this, an episode of Night Gallery, he was in that. The Delphi Bureau, it was a television pilot I think he was starring in, didn't get picked up. Ten of Fly, Police Woman episode, 14 episodes of the Bob Crane Show. Oh, by the way, that Arsenic and Lace was a TV, made-for-TV film, which he was in. He was in an episode of Ellery Queen, Joe Forrester, Spencer's Pilots, Quincy, Hardy Boys, and his last appearance in 1978 was on The Love Boat.
And his name, oddly, was Eddie Anderson on that episode.
Yeah.
Because you just did the voice of the great Ernie Anderson.
The Lobo. Yes, yes.
Oh, that,
so, yeah,
voice,
what a,
that voice.
What an amazing. Nominated twice for Emmy, Primetime Emmy. And didn't win either time, but still nominated twice. There's nothing wrong. And only one person can win, right?
That's it. Films. He was in Return to Peyton Place in 61 in an uncredited role. A movie called Man Trap. In 64, The New Interns. 68, The Wicked Dreams of Paula Schultz. Ooh, I'll bet he was in them. Patriotism, a short film in which he narrated. Then, of course, the Disney film Superdad. And a film called Gus was his final film role in 1976.
Well, Gus, that was another, wasn't that another Disney film?
I think it
was.
Yeah.
It was the mule that could kick field goals.
Yes. And he was, he was the character Pepper.
Yeah. Oh, so it's fun. What time, how much time we got there? Hey, we got time.
Oh,
I think to sneak in one more drum segment there, Dale. I think we got time I think we got time for one more drum segment there that he did on
his
Brothers Brothers Comedy
Show.
It should be South Rampart Street. Yeah.
Got it.
It'll be close, but go ahead and hit her.
Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel Hogan of Hogan's Hero, a fine guy, Mr. Bob Crane.
Again, tomorrow night, Cheap Detectives. It's Anything for a Buck Saturday. Rocky Fortune and Pat Novak.
Yep. Thanks, CW, Fogs Bang, good old Bob, for being with us tonight.
Yep.
Even when we weren't.
We were here sort of, in and out, in and out. Thanks a lot, Blog Talk. Thank you the most. Really. No, really.
Have a good one. See everybody tomorrow.
Yep, tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern. Don't forget to join us, please, as we kick it on out of here.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And Colonel
when Wayne. Next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
One thing left to say.
Dismissed.
Almost timed that pretty good, too.
Pretty darn good. Yep, you got that, stuck that in there.
You need
hey,
to
despite
take care
the
of yourself,
issues,
sir.
It was a good show.
Yeah, other than the tech issues, it was a great show. Oh, my gosh, that Bob Crane stuff was great. So hopefully that overrode that rough beginning there for a couple of reasons.
Well, you know, I'm so sorry about that.
Don't be. I'm just glad you're okay.
I've never been okay a day in my life. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, good point. Well, you're your regular normal, not okay. Okay. I don't know. Wild work week. I was looking forward to tonight a lot. So I was determined to get this to sort of work. Now, I hope it's not headset problems again. We'll find out tomorrow night.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It could be.
I talked to Gar tonight. He sounded worse than he was last time I talked to him.
Oh, jeez. Up and down.
So he's having another backslide and terrible.
I don't think they know what the heck they're doing or what the heck it is.
They don't. They don't know what it is. They know a lot of things it isn't, but they don't have no idea what it is.
Mm.
They're going back to it's an allergy again. And I say, well, it can only be that bad of an allergy if you're allergic to yourself. And I think you've been around yourself long enough over the years to have warded that off.
Well, you know, they say you can develop allergies later in life. And some people actually lose them, too, at the same time. And you just change as you get older. But I don't know. I think it is something more, something deeper, and I hope it's not something real bad.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too.
I'd
like to have him back here.
It's lasting way too long, you know?
Yeah. 14 weeks.
But between you and me, I don't think he's tried chicken soup yet. Homemade chicken soup.
Yeah, well, he's only tried the Campbell's, I think. It's not the same thing.
No, it is not the same thing. Homemade chicken soup has...
When you look at it and you see chicken feathers floating in it, you know it's homemade.
There you go. Beaks and claws. Oh,
you
how we used to fight
things.
Over the beaks and
either,
claws
either,
of the kids.
That's right. You either use it for two things, for creating a zombie or for, you know, curing something. And
yes.
For
zombie rituals,
at this point,
at least.
At this way, he could go either way, I think.
No. No, there's something magical about chicken soup. And no, I don't know that it really has healing properties, but boy, it sure makes you feel better.
Yeah.
It does. I don't know. My wife's chicken soup, you know, I mean, you got to buy chicken with skin on it.
Yeah, she puts in that secret
ingredient,
though. She puts in that secret ingredient, so you got to be careful of that.
No, not really. I mean, she doesn't even put bouillon in her soup or anything. What's secret ingredient? It's a chicken. I'll tell you, you got to have celery. You have to have celery in chicken soup and carrots. It's a must.
It sounds like a stew more than a soup.
Jeez. Oh, man, and then these... She makes these giant, thick Kluski noodles. they're practically dumplings. And potatoes. It is almost like a stew. It's just not thick. It's thin like a soup. Mm-mm-mm. Oh, God, now I'm going to ask. Not in summer. She won't make it in summer. Well, a whole lot of radiance.
Well, don't get a summer cold then.
We almost had too much radio. Too bad we couldn't get that other episode.
Yeah,
that would have been cool.
You know, we wouldn't even if I cut down out the commercials, which I did for the second one. But you know what? There's some more of the Bob Crane radio show there, clips there, and I think that if we
find other
reasons.
Maybe
we'll celebrate his birthday next year with a couple more 0 hours and some more of Bob Bob Crane shows. There's even a recording of him back in the Army days when he was a disc jockey.
Ooh, that would be good. Maybe we'll get him on another birthday or something. I don't think we should focus on his death day. I think we did a good job avoiding that topic.
We try to.
Yeah, I keep
dancing
around it, but it was unfortunate. Whatever happened, the son insists that he knows who did it, and I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it was some. Look at the documentary. It's some really weird stuff he was into there for a while.
Well, and the son denies a lot of there has been a lot of exaggerations of his father's lifestyle. So he says, the son.
I think there's videotapes to prove otherwise.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen them, nor do I care to, but.
No, I haven't seen them, but the documentary and all the equipment they had that he and this other guy had and such.
Well, when you say equipment, that makes me curious, but anyway.
Yeah, different. I didn't mean that equipment. I meant videotape equipment. And videotape equipment was, as you know, back in the mid 70s at that point, he was it was pretty big stuff.
Yeah, that was even pre-VCR. It was all real.
Yeah, it was all
stuff.
1 inch or 3 inch video.
Yep. Yeah, and that equipment for its day was quite expensive.
Oh yeah.
And you needed to be experienced to work that stuff too, to edit, and it's a whole different ball game than film.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We did. Good old analog. Good old analog.
Yeah. Which had the advantages and certain video qualities, but I'm still a film guy. I like good old film. There's something about it. Something about the imagery that I don't know that I gravitate to more so than straight video.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't put my finger on what it is or how to describe it, but there's something about the image on film that I prefer.
Well, with what they have, the technology today, you and I can do shows that, 20 years ago we could not have done.
Oh, absolutely. Just think with the green screen and the different effects that are available, even just the titling, they make it so easy with the software that's available out there now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any schmuck can be a host. Look at me.
Yeah.
But and there's so many out there. There's some that are just so good.
Yes, there are.
You would like a small TV station or something to pick that up, but there's other venues. There's the internet, and a lot of the hosts are getting there. Some of them are on some of the Pluto channels and things, and it's good to see. It's good to see.
Yeah.
And Dave, you're all over the place. You're on Pluto and a few channels too.
Yeah, I'm on a few, mostly community channels outside of
another Roku channel. Yep,
a couple different Roku channels, and it's just. And I tell you what, I've been restoring some of my old shows, and it just I picked up a video AI program that helps clean up a lot of these things, and it just is. It's just doing some amazing things to some video that was done on two cameras ago on. Not a real good, it's certainly not a professional camera. So it's just really cool how some of my early shows, I just did one which was my seventh show from 2009, and it just it almost looks like it was made yesterday.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool.
I'm so pleased with redoing these. I've done about a fifth of them. I've done about 21, 22 of them so far, so... And picking out the shows that most people don't host, since, I was probably one of the first ones that would do a murder mystery instead of all the horror shows that everyone else was hosting.
Yep. Can you hear me right now? Can you hear me right now? Dave?
I think I lost you.
Nope. No, I was testing the headset. So the headset microphone for some reason is not putting out. I'm back on the phone now. I thought I'd spring that on you. And the funny thing is, I could hear an echo of myself, but you couldn't hear me. Weird.
Well, you also had yourself on mute on the headset. You didn't take yourself off mute.
Oh, duh. No wonder.
Try it again.
Hold on. Let's try that again.
Sometimes.
Okay, testing.
Work now? Does it work now? Nope.
I may be picking you up off your phone, but not off of your headset.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know why the...
I heard something, so it was either really low on your microphone or... I heard you on your phone that was probably you had set down.
Probably.
You know what? We probably would have got a reverb and an echo had it come up. So.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know, but I'm unhappy about that. Well, hopefully we'll get it all worked out tomorrow for the next installment of Erie House Radio.
Yep. Anything for a buck night. I like that one.
Yep.
And I tell you what, that Pat Novak for Hire... It has Jack Webb and Perry Mason.
Ray.
Anyway, Jack Webb is so hilarious in there. You actually got to listen to the things he's saying that it is so stinking funny. And, Raymond Burr is the lazy cop who depends on Pat Novak to solve the case so he doesn't have to.
Cool.
So,
and of course, we got Rocky Fortune, too.
And in Rocky Fortune, you got Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Yeah, and, you get the stars on Erie House, damn it.
Tune in. You're going to have fun, folks. You're going to have fun.
That's right. Or it'll be the next one in the archive after we record it next weekend.
That's true.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, Dave, you need to get your rest, doggone it. And I got
to
go.
I'm up now. Time to do some work. Yeah. But we will see everyone back here on time tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern for Erie House Radio. So bring out the schnoz.
Bye-bye.